The weekend is near and the next round of footy is finally upon us. And your ultimate guide to all the upcoming action lies within the Fox Footy Podcast Bunker. Welcome to Match Committee.
Who have we overrated and who have we underrated? That's the big question ahead of the Fox Footy podcast after round 7 and heading into round 8. There was some big inspirational victories over the weekend and some losses that will leave some fans very, very down in the dumps. G'day everyone, I'm Ben Waterworth and joined by the star-studded usual Fox Footy podcast team, Peter Senior himself, sitting directly across me. Hello, Tom Morris.
Thanks, Ben. Thanks, Max. I must say, Ben, I love your attire this morning.
Why is that, Tom?
For all the listeners here, I understand you can't see him because it is a podcast.
That's how that works.
Ben is wearing real sort of late 1990s jeans with a collared button-up shirt tucked in. It is Jerry Seinfeld to an absolute T.
All I needed was the sneakers, and I reckon I would have been fine.
Yes,
the Junners. That dinging noise is, of course, the voice of Max Lawton. Hello, Maxi.
Hello, Benny. And it's also great that you did that on a day you're not working. You're dressed more professionally than both of us.
Oh, you're today off, too.
Yeah, I do have today. It's in for the podcast.
Oh, terrific.
Loyal.
Thank you. Well done.
In for the loyal listenership. Now, I haven't given you much a heads up at the Fox Footy Match Committee big call ahead of
I told
this,
Max
this
last night who I'm going with.
Oh, he went last
so
night.
So I can't steal it again.
Yes.
Tom hit us with your...
He steals it every single week. I still can't believe that Carlton player... What's his name, the Carlton player? The young fella?
Patrick Kerr.
Yeah. Now, there's some talk that he's a huge chance to play this
you
week.
You started that. This is all you.
Did hit a 6 from St. Kevin's onto the Monash freeway.
Really?
Yes, we spoke about it last week.
I know that.
If he plays 300 games, he can credit you for getting into the side.
Yeah, because he can hit a long ball. Now, we're not talking about Patrick Kerr this week, but I'm staying with Carlton. Jacob Wietering must come back in. Now, something went on here. I was in Hobart when he got that corky against North Melbourne.
Yes.
Now, that corky lasted for 2 weeks, which is extremely unusual. The word is...
You're not being cynical here.
No, I actually think they probably just gave him a rest for a couple of weeks. I think he probably wasn't quite right the first week after the corky.
Yep.
And they thought, mate, have another week off, get yourself right, we'll bring you back through the VFL and take the pressure off you a little bit. Because a month ago, there was a lot of... He was under the pump, wasn't he, Jacob Wietering? He took 17 marks on the weekend in the VFL, drifting across. He has to play in defence for the rest of his career. That's where he's best. Play your best players where they play their best footy.
I feel like that's exactly what a lot of people said about Wietering, is that he needs to just go to the VFL and get back into form and stuff.
Yeah.
And if that's happened now, then great. You've done well, Carlton.
I just think it's overrated sometimes.
Overrated?
Yeah, overrated.
Yes.
Young players swapping and flopping between positions. Just... play them where they play best. That's where they get their confidence. And don't move them if they're doing that. He's drafted as a number one pick as a defender. He will come back into the Carlton side as a defender.
Yes. They did have some success, obviously, moving players defence to forward there. But
Sometimes it works. Nick Riewoldt going to defence in 2002 won him a best and fairest. But I'd argue that Nick Riewoldt could play back pocket and win a best and fairest. Yes. So I think some players just need to play where they play best.
It's more a reinvention thing than when you've got the pure talent.
Who is your match committee you call, Maxi?
I just need to bring this up because I did not watch a lot of footy this weekend. I was away. But I was on the Twitters
on
Friday night. For Geelong GWS, and I saw a certain late change, which Geelong loves a late change.
They do. Out of 7 rounds.
More than any other club. And Zach Smith was in, and then he wasn't.
Yes.
And Reece Stanley was out, and then he wasn't.
Yes.
And I know there are other reasons, I'm sure, but I'd just like to see that swapped again. Let's give it a... Come on. Yeah. Come on, Zach.
What was it? Back spasms, wasn't it, Zach Smith?
I don't care.
Back spasms while sitting in a cafe.
I'm sorry, what's wrong with a chair?
No, he was on the chair in the cafe.
And he got back spasms.
And he got back spasms. It was that simple. Chris Scott said it after the game.
Either an elaborate lie or extremely bizarre. I think it's probably the latter.
He was lying to cover up a dog bite or something.
Yeah. A frisbee issue.
Yeah. There have been some bizarre, bizarre issues. Just speaking of the VFL match committee, Nathan Freeman made his return to
Sandy
on the weekend.
Yes.
31 disposals.
28 disposals.
28, sorry.
31 according to St Kilda statisticians, but 28 according to Champion Data.
Right. Yeah. Why the extra 3 disposals for the...
not sure.
31 sounds sexier than 28.
A bit of fake news, I feel. Donald Trump style.
Come on.
No, he did come back. He's still a number of weeks away from potentially pushing for an AFL game, but let's just hope he stays fit and gives it the best opportunity. Let's not forget either that St Kilda when they got him a couple of years ago, wanted the outside run. They gave up a couple of second-round picks for him, one after the other, in terms of consecutive years. He needs to play for the Saints to justify that. Otherwise, they've given up some really talented players, potentially.
When do you think he might be a chance to come back in? How many games do you think St Kilda needs to see before unleashing him?
Well, they need to see 4 to 6 games, I think.
So after the bye.
Yeah, and I think they need to see four to six good games. They're not going to play him just because he's right. They're going to play him because he's in form.
Yeah.
Now, he wasn't far away on a couple of occasions last year, but let's not forget that he played the whole back half of the season and didn't get a game.
Mm.
So it's not like he's a Brownlow medalist waiting to come back in. He still needs to prove himself as a player along with his fitness.
But the fact he's got 28 in his first game back after a couple of months off is a good sign, Maxie.
And does the Saints' predicament in terms of their win-loss affect that at all? Do you think they're bringing him in quicker? Do you think they bring him in slower?
I think it helps him because they're less concerned with winning and more concerned with trying to find out who's going to be there in 2019. He's out of contract at the end of the year.
Well, let's have a look ahead now at maybe teams we've underrated and overrated. So the power rankings, Maxie, will be coming out on Tuesday afternoon on foxfooty.com.au. But what are we expecting ahead of the power rankings?
It's still an interesting situation at the top because we're still trying to figure out who's next best after Richmond, aren't we? Mm. And it seems like there are sort of two leading contenders at this point, Adelaide and West Coast.
Who do you think is?
I have to trust Adelaide based on their track record, and once they get everyone back, they will be there.
Yeah.
But, gee, we've underrated West Coast this year.
Yeah, we have.
Six in a row now.
Yep.
Six wins in a row.
Yep.
And
that round one loss to Sydney was very admirable too.
Yes. We looked at it at the time and thought, gee, they might be all right based on that. And that was basically based on Buddy kicking eight, that entire loss.
Mm.
So West Coast is clearly up there in the top four discussion. And then you've got the teams that are still doing reasonably Hawthorn right in there. And then the big one from the weekend, obviously, was North Melbourne, who with that incredible win over Sydney, which sort of ties into the overrated side of things. I think we've overrated Sydney.
Do you think so? At the SCG or everywhere?
I mean, the SCG in particular.
They're no good at the SCG.
I think we mentioned this briefly last week, that they're no good at the SCG.
Yeah.
Sort of jokingly, as a way for North could possibly win.
Well, the guys on the couch last night talked about the disadvantage at the SCG for the Sydney Swans.
The width, isn't it? So the reason they were good at Geelong, well, they won at Geelong. They came from behind. It's so skinny. It allows them to defend in zones really well. The SCG is a lot wider. Now, it's shorter, but it's wider.
Yes.
And what we saw from North Melbourne and who else beat them there?
Port
Adelaide beat them there, is they stretched them wide.
Mm.
And the Swans aren't as good. They don't quite have the pace to deal with that. And that's why they're not as good as the SCG, according to Jared Healy. And I trust Jared.
Yes.
He's a Swans Brownlow medalist.
He talks you up every single time you're on air in any kind of radio platform. So we talked about underrating probably North Melbourne.
Yeah.
And that victory was, you know, it wasn't a pretty game, but to hold their nerve in that final minute and to see, I'm a huge Mason Wood fan, so to see come and kick four goals, I think was outstanding.
Yes, very impressive from North. And I think that also says a lot about that team as a very young team. They've sort of got that experience core, but so many young players going in and being able to hold their nerve, as you say, against Sydney on a Saturday night.
Mm.
That's a good sign for them. In terms of underrating them, what are we actually accurately rating them at? What are they?
Well, I think Robbo said it well last night. Like, we're seven rounds in. That's a fair sample size. But North Melbourne have the belief and the potential to beat any team on any given day.
Yeah.
Are we at that point?
I think their range is sort of 7 to 12 now.
Yeah.
When I think 7 is the absolute upper limit.
Mm.
But I think at the start of the year, I would have said their range is probably 12 to 17 or 18. Where North Melbourne has got it right and where St Kilda has got it wrong is they've kept their older players. I said that sounds ridiculous. They haven't traded away their older players like St Kilda tried to do. And I think they've got that right because they couldn't afford to go right down the bottom because their club doesn't allow it.
Mm.
North Melbourne's not a club that can afford to have 20,000 members and no one turning up to games. They need to remain somewhat competitive the whole time.
St Kilda's in that same bracket to a certain extent as well, aren't they?
But St Kilda hasn't done that. Now they're going to go down the bottom and be really and struggle big time. That North Melbourne, you wouldn't say this is a classic rebuild, would you, at all?
No, absolutely not. If anything, it was strange how quiet they were during the trade period because we all expected them to start, not tanking, but trying to get young players in and old players out because it makes the most sense. You use the most of the assets you have. If you've got experienced players in their 30s, you're not going to win a flag in the next 3 years. They're no use to you in a sense.
I know that's the way you feel, but I don't think North Melbourne can afford to be 18th for their club.
But what value do you think they're getting if they finish 11th this year?
Yeah, they're holding on for as long as they can, and they're far more attractive for a player to come to them at 11th and saying, we can push in the top 8 next year than they are at 18th saying, we've started again.
Do players believe that? Do they think, well, Jared Waite's going to keep playing until he's 50? So
I think they're more likely to believe that. And as Ben knows, they've got a young fella that's going to come to them. All they need is a good draft or two, and they could easily propel back up into the top four or six, I believe, because their spine is so good. Now, putting Waite aside because he's going to retire, the others are still good players. Ben Brown's still young. Zeeble's still young, if I know he's a superstar. Tarrant's young. Todd Goldstein's an All-Australian ruckman who isn't at his best, but he's still a very good ruckman. So I still think their best players are very good. Not top eight good, but still good enough to be competitive. And that is all you can ask. As a supporter, if your club is competitive on a year-to-year basis, well, you sort of put yourself in the mix.
Let's not forget that they lost to Port 2 weeks ago. And it was not a good loss. It was not a good loss.
But they've also won four of the last five.
Yes.
And we did not expect that.
I agree with you in terms of they need a couple of good drafts, but also we're seeing some of the early foundations of a couple of good drafts previously, I think, as well. Jai Simkin is a very, very good young player.
Yes.
And Davies Uniac has ample potential as well. So the guy you talked about beforehand, their academy prospect is Taran Thomas, who's based down in Tasmania, who's averaging 155 champion data ranking points in the academy series at the moment.
It's okay.
So North Melbourne might get pick 11 this year, but what actually happens is Taran Thomas is so good at the moment that they might have to use pick 11 and another later pick to match a bid on Thomas, which may come pick 2, pick 3, pick 4, somewhere around. That's how good Thomas is going at the moment.
See, that's a risk. That's using a lot of draft capital on one player.
It is. He can seriously play, though. And the thing is that he's been tied to North Melbourne for a while. Mm. He might play some VFL footy for North Melbourne a little bit later on this year. So they know that connection's strong.
Well, Glenn Luff always talks about
Champion Data's Own.
Champion Data's Own always talks about look at a draft player in the last 6 months before they get drafted. So the season before they get drafted. That is their accurate potential, I guess. Now, some players rise up from that and some drop from that. But if Taran Thomas is dominating now, the chances are if he stays fit, he's going to walk into an AFL system and be equally as good as a midfielder.
So we might have underrated North Melbourne, and we probably, to a certain extent, have underrated Richmond. There was a lot of people who didn't have Richmond in their top four, me included.
I didn't.
I'm still waiting for them to drop off the cliff, Ben, but they're not going to do it.
But how they dismantled Fremantle on the weekend, barring a 15-minute patch in the third quarter, that's scary. Their game plan is awesome, and it leads into the conversation around Tom Lynch, Tom, and you had a story about Tom Lynch on the couch and foxfooty.com.au, and Alex Rance's comments on the couch last night.
Really interesting comments from Alex Rance.
Yes.
So Rance effectively said he doesn't want to sell the farm. Richmond shouldn't sell the farm for one player because it can not ruin the culture but affect the internal morale of the team.
The strategy and the game plan that underpins this Richmond side for the past 12 months, would Lynch come in and disrupt that because he is that key forward and it has worked so well with Jack Rewald as the sole... He's not even like a key forward. He's a sort of almost a high-end mid-sized forward.
He's not
than a
too
key
dissimilar
forward.
From Jack Gunston,
yeah.
Jack Rewald, which is quite bizarre in the way they play, but I love Jack Rewald below his knees. I'd much prefer him picking up the ball and snapping than I would running out, taking a mark and kicking a goal from 40 out.
So would Tom Lynch disrupt this game plan and spanner in the works?
No, he's not going to disrupt it. But how much money is too much money for a player that might not have a hell of a lot of difference on the team?
I think Rance, he did make those comments. He also said he'd be happy to have him because he wouldn't have to play on him.
Of course,
sort of jokingly. And obviously he'd be happy to have good players at the club. The thing you need to remember, everyone needs to remember, is that Richmond is not going to be this team forever.
No.
Richmond is not going to be clearly the best team in the comp forever. Not even for the whole season, probably.
No.
That's just how it works. It seems right now that they've nailed a perfect structure. Someone will figure it out. Some players will drop off. Some players will
get injured, prove
not to be as good as we think they are. Something will change, and they will need to adapt because it always happens. So you can't make the assumption that, oh, we've got a perfect structure, let's not change it.
Which is what Alistair Clarkson has done so well for Hawthorn, which is why he's constantly dubbed a genius by AFL pundits right around. And speaking of Clarkson and Hawthorn, you had a story last night, Tom, about Tom Lynch, that Hawthorn, at the moment, if Lynch decides to leave the Gold Coast Suns at the end of the year, might be the front runners.
Yeah, and it's a big if, because he could still stay at the Gold Coast, and I still believe Gold Coast will offer him more than any other club will offer him.
Yeah.
And he'll have a slight cherry on top of an ambassador role as well on the Gold Coast, although it's not a significant amount of money. Hawthorn is the front runner, because they are in the best position to lure him with the carrot of a brand new facility at Dingley, 45 minutes?
Dingley or Rioli?
Oh dear.
45 to an hour away from Sorrento, where he grew up.
Yep.
And Alistair Clarkson is an amazing salesman. Yep. He really is. He'd say, come play for me and I will win you, we will win flags. And who could not trust that?
Yeah.
Four premierships he's had. Look, I'm not saying he's not going to go to Richmond. Look, he still might go to Collingwood. He might stay at Gold Coast. But as it stands right now, Hawthorn is number one on the list if he chooses to leave the Gold Coast.
I like that a lot, especially in terms of the fact that Jared Ruffhead's coming close to the end of his career.
It makes sense. Ruffhead, what, he's 31, and he's not as sharp as he once was. I just think Lynch would be perfect for Hawthorn, wouldn't he? And my understanding is from the Lynch camp that they are more warm to Hawthorn than they are to the Tigers.
What about Collingwood, any chance?
Yeah, well, they're an outside. Things can change. I think they're an outside chance, but I think Richmond and Hawthorn significantly more.
That Collingwood-Brisbane game on Sunday night was gripping viewing, and he understood why Nathan Buckley said what he said after the game about he wasn't happy defensively with how the game panned out. But for the natural viewer, that was footy at its purest best.
It was awesome. There was space everywhere, wasn't
there?
Who's got these players? If you're not happy with it, though, Nathan Buckley, put someone on Dane Zorko, because he's cutting you to shreds, 34-4, and then you say after the game, oh, no, the boys didn't do their job. Well, that might be true, but you had one player for Brisbane who you love, Ben.
Yes.
Literally ran rings around the Collingwood players. It was a terrific game of footy. The last two Sunday nights have been great.
Yes.
The Frio West Coast game and then Brisbane versus Collingwood. And I'm super impressed with the Lions at the moment. They're 0-7, but I actually really enjoy watching them play.
And guess which time slot we don't have this coming week? Sunday Twilight.
Yep. Yes. Six games on the Saturday and just the two on the Sunday for Mother's Day.
Yeah. Hold that for Fair or Fast, please, Ben.
Okay, holding that for Fair or Fast. So we'll just get through a couple more underrated and overrated. So the Brisbane Lions are 0-7, but I think as Jared Waitley said last night on 360, I don't think Brisbane Lions fans are too concerned by that, considering the performance of Sunday night and some of the other performances.
Yeah, they just lost to Port. They're showing all the signs of a team that is rebuilding in exactly the right way, aren't they? Rayner looks to be an absolute star. Yeah. You just hope that they can continue on their way, but clearly Hodge is having a real impact on that team as well.
You're still having losses like the Richmond loss, though. But having said that, I think 0-7, but promising, is the best possible result for Brisbane.
Yes. So, all right, so if Brisbane's promising at the moment, and this was brought up by Gary Lyon on the couch last week, between Brisbane, Carlton and St Kilda, where are we ranked? Maybe in terms of the future prospects of these three clubs, right now, from 16, 17, 18, Brisbane on top of those two clubs and St Kilda at the bottom of those three clubs, sorry?
I think I would most like to be Carlton. I think Brisbane might be marginally ahead in terms of talent they've got in terms of how impressive they look this year. But if you're a list manager trying to rebuild a club, it is easier to rebuild Carlton than Brisbane because it's Carlton, not Brisbane.
Yeah, that's spot on, actually. Yeah. So if Brisbane moved to Melbourne, then you might be saying Brisbane.
Correct. But because they're based there, because there are just factors based on that financial location, otherwise it does make it tougher.
Yeah.
In St Kilda, what do we say about St Kilda? They're struggling. They're clearly on the downward trajectory.
I would pay big, big money to be a fly on the wall in a list management meeting at St Kilda at the moment. Yeah, they would be saying, where the hell are we at? What is going on? We had this rebuild, this structured road to 2018. We wanted to be finals and challenging for our second flag by 2020. And we are absolutely nowhere near it. We clearly overrated where we were.
So big question without notice as well. But can you put a finger on where it might have gone wrong? Are there certain decisions that you think, in hindsight, they probably shouldn't have done?
Well, not decisions they shouldn't have done, but it all comes down to the kids you draft in.
Right.
Doesn't it?
So you think it's a talent issue?
I think it's a talent issue. I'm not sure it's necessarily coaching.
Yep.
But you have this many young players you bring in first-round picks or top 25 picks since 2012, 2013, and you've got some good workers there. You've got some really nice AFL players, but who's going to be a franchise player for you? Who's going to be a player that wins a Brownlow or wins a Norm Smith medal? And at the moment, there's nobody. Now, things can change quickly, but the Saints are a long, long way off because they seem to have reached their crescendo of this rebuild, which was 10th last year or 11th or wherever they came,
just
missed finals, and now they're on the way back down this ladder. They are playing snakes and ladders, and it's bad to watch.
And that key also was to that plan was getting in a big fish in the last trade period, and we've mentioned it before, but if you can't top your list off with that extra talent when you really need it, then you're no chance.
You mentioned an interesting word there, nice. A couple of nice players that have come on. That's a common word that I keep hearing coming out of St Kilda, is that they're a nice club.
Hutchie, you know, said it about them last night on Footy Classified.
Did he really? I honestly didn't hear that.
He said they're too nice.
But that word keeps on coming out of St Kilda.
Yep. I think that's a product of the fact they're not winning games. If you win games, everything else... See, I disagree with Mick Malthouse's article in the Herald Sun that what do they stand for? Well, winning comes first.
Yeah.
If you're winning, the culture seems great, the coach seems great, all of a sudden you're playing a really hard brand of footy, but you need to win for games of footy. The reality is they're not winning games of footy, and all the other stuff is just on the periphery.
Just before Fair or Farce, Australia's favourite segment, he's back on the Fox Footy podcast. What do we make of the Giants on Friday night against Geelong? The Cats were impressive, and I think Chris Scott was right calling it a complete performance. But when you kick at 46% for the night, which is, I think, seventh or eighth worst that Champion Data has ever recorded, and then considering the injuries that they've got as well, how much do you read into that loss? And we're to the point where some pundits are thinking they could miss finals.
Yeah, I think this is the worst GWS will look all year. I think based on their injuries, based on the kicking that you say, that's a lot of that is not luck, but they won't kick that badly again this season. Mm. They won't play that badly again this season. They'll have players back later this season.
Yeah, speaking to people at the Giants, it is incredibly tough to go down to the Cattery and play there on this narrow oval. You feel like there's no space. You feel like you're playing in a phone box. And as a result, you miss targets. Mm. Now, clearly Geelong were missing Menzel, they were missing Ablett, a couple of others as well. But to kick 32 points for a team that is meant to be pushing for a flag is unacceptable. I agree they're not going to look any worse, but the Giants are in a lot of trouble. I no longer think they can win the flag.
What can they can still make finals, though, can't they?
Yeah, I think they should play finals, but I'm really questioning everything about them at the moment.
But if you tip them, say, fourth to seventh on your ladder preseason, I think that's where most people probably had them, like thereabouts, not still in the eight, though, and then they get a bunch of injuries and they play really poorly, and we say that the competition's super even right now. Yeah. Of course they're going to look like a team that's in the bottom six or eight. In some weeks. That's just how it works if we think every team's that
even. Of course, yeah. I think Geelong are good. I don't think Geelong are unbelievable.
No, they're not. And they're certainly not right now.
And I would suggest Friday nights was more about GWS struggling than Geelong playing like the Harlem Globetrotters.
Yes. All right. Well, that's probably a nice little intro music for Australia's favourite segment.
Fair or Farce. Here we go. So I'm taking over the hosting duties for Fair or Farce.
Yes.
Can't wait.
Just relax, Benny.
Brought to you by Fox Footy. This is to you.
Oh, we got a sponsor, did we? Of ourselves.
This is to you, Ben. Fair or Farce.
Yes.
And I need you not to sit on the fence, please. The AFL gets too greedy, too quickly, with 18 AFL clubs and soon to be 10 AFLW clubs, dispersing the talent too far and wide and lessening the quality.
Okay, so I think that's fair from an AFLW perspective. Yeah. I think they've raced into this far too quickly because there's, at the moment, at this stage, there is not the talent pool available. I think it's probably farcical, I think, for AFL side of things. They had 16 clubs for a while. They've
so you've
got into expansion.
Different for men and women.
Yes.
That is inequality from you, Ben.
I knew you'd do that.
No, you make a very valid point.
I think 10 AFLW clubs, they probably rushed that a little bit too much because the talent pool isn't there. Having said that, though, I'm a little bit concerned that the talent pool might not be there for 18 AFL clubs, just judging by how just the nature of the draft in the past couple of years and where it might be heading. It's got some questions around that, Thomas.
Yes. Max, fair or farce to you. Ross Lyon's reputation is tainted forever.
Oh, gosh.
Well, fair in the sense that if you look at his Wikipedia page, it's going to be one of the things on it, I guess.
One of the first things that comes up in Google.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's a thing that people are going to be reminded of, and part of that is the handling of the situation, part of that being the forced handling of the situation.
Yes.
It is. They're contractually obligated to be confidential about all this. And
yes.
He could have admitted that, yes, it was me involved in this and sort of done a little bit to calm that. Yeah. But we were still going to say, oh, he didn't really say much in that press conference. Mm-hmm. So there's not a lot he can do now to stop that, I would say. But so, yeah, that's fair.
Well answered and legally very much above board as well, Max. Fair or fast, Ben.
Yes.
Six games on a Saturday is not just poor scheduling, it's disgraceful scheduling.
No, that's farcical from you, Tom. it's Mother's Day on Sunday, and I've got the opportunity, actually, of taking my mother to Collingwood versus Geelong on Sunday. She's a mad Collingwood supporter. Oh. That's my little Mother's Day gift for mother.
That's
on
terrific.
Yes. 5:10 p.m. showdown is
that's
squeezed
bad.
In like
Sorry.
A...
Yeah. So that's a farce. So the showdown should not be played at 5:10, 4:40 Central Time.
It's like stale tomato in an old sandwich. It is disgraceful. Mm.
That should be a Saturday night kind of operation.
Yeah.
So what are we thinking in terms of time slots then? Are you one of those people who likes the idea of spreading out every game so you can watch every game live if you want to?
I like that on Sunday. I think there should be a game that starts earlier on Sunday. I don't mind Saturday being a little bit more squashed, but I think Sunday you should be able to go back to back to back and watch all three games
in
a row.
Yeah, so that brings in the Sunday night football probably talk. I'm not sure it does.
I would start a game. I think they start what time on Sunday?
They start 1:10.
Yeah, I'd be starting 12:30 on a Sunday for the first game.
Right.
You're still about to overlap with the 3:20 game then.
Yeah, maybe.
And then you've still got the 4:40 game.
Well, maybe make the 4:40 game a 5:10 game.
I've heard it suggested that if there is a Sunday night game, it should only be in Adelaide, Perth and Sydney.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. I wouldn't be having a Carlton Collingwood style MCG Sunday night game.
Well, that's what turned people off Sunday night football.
Yeah, I wouldn't be doing that. Yeah. And last fair or fast to you, Max.
Yes.
Rory Laird and other Adelaide defenders made Jake Lever worth more than what he is.
Ooh,
I think that's entirely fair. I think you have to evaluate players in the system they play in, and I think him being in a very good defender in a very good defence helps him get to the level he was at when he was recruited by Melbourne. I think that's entirely reasonable.
Interesting article from Riley Beveridge on foxsports.com.au yesterday about Rory Laird and how he's only 7 disposals behind Tom Mitchell at the moment.
Amazing, isn't it? And, well, Gavin Wanganeen won a Brownlow from the back pocket. Now, Rory Laird's not a back pocket, but he's playing a lot at half back. Yep. I haven't seen his champion data heat map. Yep.
Yeah, no, but definitely he's the number 2 intercept player in the competition.
Yeah, okay.
At the moment.
I would love it if he pushed for a Brownlow from that position. He's a star, but
he is.
I think Jake Lever is getting better for Melbourne, but clearly he's taken a while to adjust without those gun defenders and really defensively minded midfielders around him.
On Laird and the Brownlow briefly, is there not a necessary problem when we're saying this guy's really quietly putting together a Brownlow season, but don't we hear about Brownlow contenders because they're obvious?
Yeah.
That's why they get Brownlow votes?
Yeah, potentially. We don't know what the umpires are thinking. I just hope they're recognising his value. How loose is he? Does he man up? Or is he very much in his own?
I thought he meant off the field.
Riley put in a stat yesterday, thanks to Champion Data, that he's won 73% of his defensive one-on-one contests so far.
So he wins them, yes.
So he wins them. So he's solid.
He was a rookie, wasn't he?
He was a rookie. He's turning into one of the biggest bargain picks for quite some time in the AFL.
Unbelievable pick. I'm a huge, huge fan of his work. That's why I added it in. That's for a fast for this week, Max.
Yes.
There we go.
Yeah, that's got some legs, I think, Verifas. No, to say that.
Very popular last year.
A couple of issues, I think, before we get into the cups and the round 8 tips. The Tom Hawkins touch and the Nick Natanui tackle. So we're recording this before the tribunal on Tuesday night. We're getting back into the routine of having Tuesday night tribunals and live crosses from Tuesday night tribunals with Jules and the team out there. But where do we sit? Particularly, I think, to start off on the Tom Hawkins touch, which I think is probably going to be more of a statement call by the tribunal tonight, like rather than anything else.
Yeah, well, I'm firmly on the tribunal side to give him a week here because AFL has so many grey areas and areas which are easily debatable. Oh, what do we think about that? What can we do here? One of the black or white things in this game is that you don't touch the umpire. It is black or white. If you touch the umpire, regardless of motive, that depends, that dictates how long you get, then you get a penalty.
Regardless of motive or force.
That's right. And look, I looked at this. I'm sure Hawkins didn't mean it aggressively in any way. And people scoff at the suggestion that you shouldn't treat AFL players in order to filter down to lower levels. But I think clearly with umpires and footy, you must treat it with one eye to lower levels. And I think 1 week would be a fair punishment.
Is somewhat of this not a slight remnant of the past when theoretically a player would probably have a bit more force when contacting an umpire?
Yeah, it is a remnant of the past. But you just don't touch an umpire. We don't want to be soccer. You just don't touch an umpire. And people say, oh, have some common sense. He didn't mean it. Well, don't get inside his head and think what he did and didn't mean. Keep it black or white. If you touch an umpire, you get a penalty. That's the reality.
Yeah, and I agree with that.
I also didn't hate Robbo's idea on AFL 360 last night of a $10,000 fine. Just a really big fine.
Yeah.
Because if you're saving suspensions for player versus player issues, perhaps, and a financial penalty could be more impactful in some ways.
I'd settle for $10,000, but geez, it's a big penalty.
So, but I think if you want to send a statement to the rest of the country who's playing footy, what are they going to more relate to? Will they relating to missing a week of footy, or will they relate to a $10,000 fine?
I think a week of footy.
Agree.
Yeah. Yes. I really think so. I feel sorry.
It depends on the statement. I'll be interested to see what Hawkins argues on Tuesday night. Because after the game, he said he thought it was an opposition player's hand. But when you look at the multiple camera angles and a ripping shot from Quinn Rooney on Getty Images as well, that it looks like he's got sort of firm eyes for the umpire.
Yeah, well, don't try to get inside his head. We're not mind readers.
Yes, I understand.
I am.
Are you?
Yeah. I know what you're thinking right now. No, you're not Max.
Hawkins has got every right to argue it. Yeah, I'm not Max. Anyway, it's going to be a very interesting tribunal, that's for sure.
Well, so in the second case will be, I assume that, well, we're recording this before the official word is in, but you think that Nick Natanui is going to be going to the tribunal. If he does go to the tribunal, has he got a good case of getting off, do you think?
No, I don't think he does, under the rules. Now, if I could rewrite the rules of Australian football now, this wouldn't be worth a suspension. But under how they are written, I think this is clearly 1 week. Now, people are arguing, oh, it was a good it wasn't a good tackle because it was a free kick against him.
Yeah, he's in the back.
He pushed him in the back. Now, people are also arguing that it's not his fault he's 103 kilos and Carl Amon's a little kid. Well, you have to have a duty of care to the head. And it is harsh, and I think this is a classic case of you execute one, but you save 1,000. Everyone learns from this if Nick Natanui gets suspended for a week. I feel sorry for Nick Nat because I wouldn't like the rules to be written this way, but this is how it is.
This is like a really unfortunate one,
yeah,
and the one word I'd use to describe this incident was clumsy.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it just so happened that it's a huge player against a smaller player.
Yeah.
And 98% of matchups between all AFL players, this would not be worth a suspension.
If it says it's excessive, if the rules say excessive force and the result is the player being knocked out, as he was, then I think it's pretty clear cut. This is exactly the sort of tackle, along with sling tackles, that Michael Christian has a big problem with at women's football. And this is why he spoke to the umpire in that three-quarter time incident, I guess, at Old Brighton versus Old Scotch women's game, because of these sort of tackles. You rule out these tackles and you protect the people with the ball. Malcolm Blight thinks it should be 3 weeks. I don't think that at all.
No, I feel
sorry for Nick Nat. I think a week will suffice, but he's got every right to argue it as well.
Could he foresee the contact, Carl Amon?
Well, because he's got the ball. You've got to expect contact if you've got the ball.
But and he did have an arm free, Amon.
Slight reference to the Ryan Burton and Sean Higgins incident.
But the other argument is, well, Nick Natanui, what was he meant to do? What, turn him around and hurt his shoulder?
Yeah.
Just don't have so much excessive force driving him into the ground.
I've heard a few people talk about sort of Nick Nat's aggression when it comes to tackling, and it is quite unbelievable for a big man how athletic he is and how much force that allows him to tackle with. He might have sort of all sort of come to a bit of a head here with this tackle, unfortunately.
We want to look at things in a black and white way. We want to say, oh, but it's just a tackle, it's fine. But there's so many fine degrees in this that it just goes over that line.
Yeah.
There I'm fine with a suspension because of that.
Protect the head has become sort of a cliche. I think we actually need to think what that means. Mm. Do not allow players to have unnecessary head injuries. And whenever they do, again, you need to execute one to save 1,000, and this is exactly that.
So as we're recording, we don't know if definitely going to the tribunal, but Josh Kennedy did say on 6PR on Tuesday morning that we would probably try and challenge it because we don't want to miss Nick this week.
Yeah.
And he's against GWS at Spotless, where he won the match for them in 2016.
That was unbelievable.
What a game. To claim the Jonathan Giles Cup.
Can I say, I love Nick Natanui and the way he plays.
Oh, I love him too.
And he can still tackle aggressively, but maybe just don't let the play be knocked out.
So let's have a look at round eight. And it starts with a big Friday night between Hawthorn and the Sydney Swans. Sydney got a pretty good record against the Hawks. So I'm looking forward to seeing how they match up after a couple of patchy performances.
Is it the MCG, not the SCG?
MCG.
Therefore, Sydney has a chance.
Yes.
Ooh, yes.
Well, they like, yeah, well, it's quite wide, the MCG. It's a cricket oval, remember?
Melbourne I do remember ground. That. Yeah. The title.
Yes. They play a Boxing Day test there every year on a very flat pitch.
What sport is that? Badminton?
Yeah, cricket.
Which will be on Fox Sports this year.
It will be, yeah. Yes, absolutely. With Adam Gilchrist leading the team.
Go on, Gilly.
I'm sure.
Who's going to win this one? Hawthorn, Sydney, the MCG. Oh, I rate Hawthorn. I do rate Hawthorn.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard to tip Sydney. Is there a theorem coming up, by the way?
So the theorem this week, so it evolves every week, the theorem.
So it kind of guidelines parts of the Caribbean.
The devil's advocate would say, changes to suit your needs.
Yeah, if you're not sure what the theorem is, just Google rebound effect, Fox footy, and you'll see an article. So the theorem last week dictated that Essendon would beat Hawthorn. I tipped Essendon. Essendon didn't beat Hawthorn, but this was offset because I should have tipped North Melbourne to beat Sydney, which was the theorem, and I didn't, but that was a perfect example of what it should have been.
Why?
North Melbourne had lost the week before to Port. Sydney had won the week before against Geelong, and North Melbourne beat Sydney.
No, but the Sydney win over Geelong was a good win.
It was a good win, but the first three quarters they weren't
really
that good.
But the North loss to Port was a bad loss.
Yeah, bad loss, so they rebounded really nicely.
Yeah.
Anyway, the theorem stands.
Working beautifully. As we said, they're more like guidelines than actual
They actually are guidelines. It is. Keep it in the back of your mind.
No, okay. We will. No, I'm
in a 50-50.
I think Hawthorn will go in favourites to claim the Ben McGlynn Cup on Friday night. Now, GWS, we talked about it beforehand, hosting West Coast for the John Giles Cup there, Tom.
GWS, I think, will win this. It's a long road trip for West Coast. They're travelling across the continent.
Is this the theorem coming in here as well? Because that was a seriously bad loss.
Yeah, not a bad call from you. Who did West Coast play last week?
They played Port and won pretty convincingly.
Yeah. Nah, I think this is the theorem and GWS will win.
West Coast wins this 100%.
Do you want to have some sort of bet?
Yes.
What do you want to bet?
You came up with it. You have to come up with the terms.
A can of Coke from the vending machine at Fox Footy.
That will kill me as a diabetic, so I do not agree.
Coke. What do you drink?
Zero.
Coke Zero. Yes.
Okay, Coke Zero. Yes. I mean, I thought you said zero. What do you drink? Zero. You must drink something.
Yeah, Strong Zero, the Japanese alcoholic beverage.
Okay, there we go.
There we go. Well played.
Fist bump sealed.
Well played, gentlemen. Scott Camporelli Cup up for grabs at the MCG. Carlton and Essendon, 2:10 p.m.
Good player, Scott Camporelli.
Yes, very solid, reliable player.
Camporelli, Camporeali.
I'm a Camporelli fan.
Yeah. Carlton is going to win this game.
Yes.
I really hope Carlton win this game.
Been saying it for a while. I think this is the one. I think both 0-7 teams win this week.
Right.
Is that right?
I think Carlton
win. I think Carlton win as well. I think Essendon are absolutely abysmal at the moment. They're playing the wrong way.
Joe Danaher going to miss and potentially more weeks as
well? Yeah, there's that issue over on his groin. I think the decision will be made today. I wouldn't be surprised.
A bit of OP, apparently.
Yeah, if they put him in cotton wool, that would make sense. And it also makes sense why he's not moving very well.
Yeah, not crashing packs, as was discussed on the couch last night.
Yes, I think Carlton, they've been sort of ticking along at their own rate. Look, Adelaide... They lost Adelaide by, 55 points?
That was the most generic game. It's like, yeah, of course that happened.
Yeah, but they won the second quarter. And I think they'll win this match against Essendon. And the fans will rejoice.
It does worry me, though, when these happen and everyone tips the upset, that means it doesn't happen.
Yeah, it's actually not really the underdog
anymore. That's the Max theorem. Is that when everyone tips an upset, it doesn't
happen. We'll make our own theorems now, Ben.
Yes.
Yes, no, we're all for creativity on the fly here at the Fox Footy podcast. Want a prediction here, not only a winner for the Gold Coast v Melbourne clash at the Gabba for the Matthew Warnock Cup, want a winner, but also maybe a crowd number that might rock up to
Where
the Gabba.
Is it?
It's at the Gabba.
The great thing about the Gabba, if you've ever watched sport there, is it always looks like it's full because of the colour of the seats.
Very smart,
absolutely
isn't it?
Genius. There could be 15 people there. Oh, sort of 15, 20,000, I reckon.
So is this going to be like Price is Right rules closest without going over for the crowd?
Yeah. Okay.
You go first, Tom.
Firstly, the winner, Melbourne.
Yes.
Yes, agreed.
The crowd, I think, 12,333.
Closest without going over, so I'm going to tip one.
One,
because if it's under that at all, I win.
Oh, here we go.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think the D's win this, and I think the D's are just getting up a little head of steam at the moment.
Just a special shout out to my man Braden Goober Crossley,
who was what a man.
I don't know if you caught any of the Ballarat game against the Bulldogs on the weekend, but Braden Crossley is a serious cult figure.
18-year-old with a 35-year-old head was the headline.
Yes, the quote from Dermot Burton. Fantastic. Now the highly anticipated showdown, also known more colloquially as the Brad Symes Cup, between Port Adelaide and Adelaide at 5:10 p.m. Eastern, 4:40 Central Time on Saturday afternoon.
I believe there's a special commemorative advertiser edition with Brad Symes on the front cover.
You know what? I would not be surprised.
Be great.
At all. Who wins, Maxi? Symes.
Ooh, Adelaide. Adelaide wins this because they're in real good form right now, I reckon.
Adelaide's playing good footy and Port aren't, so the obvious one is Adelaide. The rebound effect would suggest that Port bounce back up, but I just don't back Port, and things aren't really working for them, are they? And I wonder when the blowtorch will start to come on Ken Hinckley. I think they're 11th on the ladder, Port Adelaide. They can't afford to drop too far off the pace. They're not too far off the pace now, but if they lose another couple, it's going to be tough to play finals.
I was away over the weekend. How was Ryder in his return for Port?
Okay, without being spectacular. Like, he's coming up against Nat Nui who's arguably one of them. Well, there's a lot of informed ruckman at the moment, but he's certainly up there.
Because I think we have to remember how much of a flow-on effect that's having on their forward line as well, forcing their big forwards to play in the ruck.
They just need a bit more from their recruits, don't they? Motlop, Watts, Rockliffe's been injured.
But we knew going in that those are the up-and-down players. They were never going to be consistently good over the entire season.
Well, I think they hoped that they'd be a little bit more up than down. At the moment, they're a little bit more down than up.
Well, Rockliffe should come back into the side, hopefully. Had 31 disposals in the Sandfall on the weekend. Power Pepper kicked two from 28. Do you think he'll come back in?
Yeah, I think he will. I don't think Rockliffe's too happy playing Sandfall, if I'm honest. Okay. He was the main man at Brisbane.
Yeah.
The super coach pig.
Yes.
And now that's coming from someone who's never done super coach in his life.
I think AFL Fantasy, I believe.
I've done AFL Fantasy before, but he's... he needs to lift a little bit. This half-forward role's where he's best, and he needs to cop that and play better footy.
Speaking of Brisbane, they will be taking on the Western Bulldogs in the Jed Adcock Cup on Saturday night at Etihad Stadium. We already know, Maxie, that you're keen on the Lions here.
Yes, and I think I would have said this even before they were impressive against Collingwood, and the Bulldogs were fine without being amazing against Gold Coast, Jack McRae aside.
Could win the Brownlow.
I saw that in the Herald Sun today. They had their little rankings. And
yep. He's very noticeable, left foot.
Mm. Yep. I reckon they need to finish maybe a little bit higher on the ladder, sort of Gold Coast, Ablett territory.
They can win if they finish 9th, 10th, they can win the Brownlow.
But they won't finish that. So my point would be they're not going to finish out of the bottom six. Yeah, I think this is basically two even-ish teams, and Brisbane has a lot of, momentum's a bit overplayed, but they look good.
I'm going to be here for this one, Ben, Saturday night.
You're at Right in the Boundary, will you?
Right in the Boundary for 3AW.
Yes.
And I do agree that the Brisbane Lions are a good chance, but I'm still tipping the Bulldogs at Eddie Hatton.
Makes me feel better about my upset pick.
If it was at the Gabba, I'd be picking the Lions.
Yeah, I think a lot of people would be as well. Over to Optus Stadium, we head for the sixth and final game on Saturday. Between Fremantle and St Kilda for the Mark Gale Cup.
I do remember. Now, Mark Gale, actually, is a good friend of my father's.
Tim Morris.
He was the assistant coach of the Melbourne Grammar 9As in 2001. And who played in that team, Ben?
You.
Matt Thomas.
Oh, did he really?
Yeah, so Mark Gale and Matt Thomas have some sort of connection.
Oh, two really obscure kind of operators combined.
Sorry, am I just going to AFL tables hitting random? Is this what's going on?
Who wins, Max? Could this get ugly?
Freo could win this big. Yeah. I like again.
Could have done Zach Dawson as well. But
Freo.
Too soon.
Yeah.
Freo's a good chance here. St Kilda are struggling. We've seen what happens to the battling Victorian sides on the road a couple of weeks ago with the Dogs going to Optus to play Freo. I reckon it's a similar sort of situation.
Question without notice, has there ever been a bigger whipping boy for as long as Zach Dawson was a whipping boy for St Kilda Fremantle?
If that was a fair or fast, I'd say that's probably the most fair thing I've heard today.
I feel like Jack Darling overtook him a little, but the longevity, Dawson gets him.
Jack Darling's playing good footy.
That's my point. He's sort of relinquishing the title.
Best on ground against Port Adelaide on the weekend. And then we had two cracking games to finish Sunday. So it's not necessarily the Sunday twilight game.
Do they overlap?
They will overlap. So there's a 1:10 game.
Mother's Day.
It's a Mother's Day.
Couldn't care less. Mother's love overlaps. Too. Mother's Day morning is fine. Afternoon's about footy.
Special shout out to G Morris if she's listening
She will not be listening.
North Melbourne taking on Richmond for the Robin Nahas Cup.
Yeah.
Are the Roos... This is the biggest test of the season so far. Are they a chance here?
I was going to say Aaron Edwards, but that's fine.
Too soon.
The Roos, are they a chance? Yes, they're a chance, but not enough for me to tip them. I think Tigers are playing too well.
Yep.
You can't tip against the Tigers at all at the moment.
So this is at Etihad as well. We all know how good the Tigers are at the G.
Yes, I think that does play into it a little bit. I am 1% more likely to tip North, so they're at 2% for me to win this game.
Right. Yeah.
Okay, I think the Tigers win.
What about the game between...
Believe it overlaps. It's just ridiculous, Ben.
Yeah, I agree.
You've got two games on a
Sunday. What are you going to do? Play Collingwood Geelong at 4:40?
Well, yes.
Yes.
Or the other
Channel 7's going to be thrilled with that.
Or North Melbourne Richmond at 4:40 and Collingwood Geelong at 1:45.
Yeah, that's the thing, though, that Channel 7 has... Because of the allotment of games on Saturday, Channel 7 only have one game on Saturday and Fox have five. So it's a big commentary roster. Speaking of commentary roster, Lee Montagna makes his commentary debut for Western Bulldogs in Brisbane on Saturday night. So it means there's commentators all over the place for Fox, which means there's a 7 game on a Saturday, which means they have to lead into the news, which means there has to be a 3:30.
I understand the logistical and the financial realities, but surely the integrity of the game is more important. And you want as many eyeballs as possible watching, and when you mesh the two games together, you don't get that.
And I think with Collingwood Geelong, you mean leading into bounce.
Of course, which it will be for the Carl Steinfurt Cup between the Pies and the Cats.
That's a great little pickup from you. Look, correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm sitting with two Geelong supporters here, and your mother, of course, is a Collingwood supporter, Ben. What's her name?
Denise.
Hello to Denise.
Yeah, she'll be listening. Definitely.
And Nikki Lawton, of course, as well. But if you
loyal Twitter follower,
if you have Collingwood versus Geelong the last 2 or 3 years, I always feel like I've got this tip wrong. Whoever's been the underdog has won this match.
Because Collingwood always wins this.
It's bizarre.
I think Geelong won last year, I remember being very pessimistic going into that game, thinking, oh, Collingwood always wins.
Yeah.
But Collingwood have a great record overall, generally, in the past decade across Geelong. Of course, the classic win was the day Mason Cox took a bounce, Justin Madden style, at the MCG, and kicked a goal. And geez, isn't Mason Cox playing some really good footy in the past couple of weeks as well? That's been a really good story.
And wasn't Justin Madden great on open mic? I enjoyed that as well.
Yes. That Mason Cox mark late in the Brisbane win.
Oh, huge.
Excellent.
Yes. I am tipping Geelong, but not with any ounce of confidence whatsoever.
Are you being pessimistic here, Mason?
No, I think this is actually Collingwood is good enough to just beat Geelong this year. Particularly the G they're doing.
I must admit, and I've always tried to hate Collingwood. I'm actually really enjoying what they're doing at the moment. They've got players, Degoe in the forward line, Sidebottom in the forward line, and Stevenson, a young fella.
Phillips in career best form.
Would Stevenson be the clear favourite for the Rising Star?
Not, oh, I don't know if about a clear favourite, but he's... Maybe at this stage, he's probably the favourite. Not a clear favourite.
I like Charlie Spargo at the moment.
Oh, he's been very impressive for the Ds. You know what? I looked at the drafting as well, and I think Jaden Stevenson would have been perfect at pick four for North.
Yeah.
Nothing against Davies Uniacke, who I think will be a solid player. But Stevenson would have been the perfect player for North, and I just think the heart condition, unfortunately, turned North off and a couple
the,
other clubs.
He's the upside pick in that situation.
Yes.
What does Jack Graham need to do to get a nomination?
Yeah.
Has he not been nominated at all, ever?
Don't believe so.
Five games last year, but you don't get him in the finals,
but
do you?
But yeah, three of them were finals as well, and he came in late.
Well,
and Jacob Townsend stole his thunder late in the season.
That's right. Against West Coast, was that over there?
Fremantle.
If you're Jack Graham, I think you got a premiership medallion and going okay.
In the Richmond Hall of Fame as well, Jack Graham.
Not Hall of Fame, he's a life member.
Potato.
Well, who was the last player to win a premiership and then a Rising Star in that order?
That's a great question from you.
I wonder.
Yes. Yeah, that's one for Twitter mates.
One will go into Stats Confidential potentially on foxfooty.com.au. Edition of the Fox Footy podcast this week. Looking forward to having both your gentlemen's company next week for the Fox Footy podcast. But in the meantime, keep clicking back to foxfooty.com.au.